meeting is now being recorded.
Okay. I'm going to just list the people here in Vancouver, and then I don't know how we're going to announce all the others, but I think people should announce themselves. That will be the easiest way.
Okay, so, go ahead.
Sitting in Vancouver here is in no particular order, Martin Botterman, Becky Burr, Chris Despain, Jona Soinonen, Leon Sanchez, and Sarah Deutsch. And from ICANN.org, we have Joran Marby, John Jeffrey, Teresa Swinehart, Jamie Hedlund, Sam Eisner, Akram Atala. Have I missed anybody? I think that's it. I know that there are some other board members listening. Maybe those board members listening would just call their name.
Yeah, this is Avery Doria in a very noisy place, so I'm going back on mute.
So Avery is on call. Any other board members? No other board members at the moment. And from your side, Steve?
Thank you, Shireen. It's Steve Del Bianco with the BC, and then I'll kick over to Brian, and then the others that we've asked to join will introduce themselves.
Okay.
This is Brian Winterfeld.
Hello, Brian.
Hi there.
Okay.
Hey, Fabrizio Vire, Perkins Coie.
Sorry, we couldn't hear you. Could you say it out loud?
Sure. Fabrizio Vire from Perkins Coie.
Fabrizio. Okay. Welcome, Fabrizio. Anybody else?
Yep. Mason Cole with Perkins Coie.
Hello, Mason.
Hello. It's Denise Michelle representing Facebook.
Hello, Denise.
Hello.
Anyone else? No one else? So we
Hi, who just joined?
It's Vicky Scheckler.
Victoria Scheckler.
Victoria, Vicky, okay. Anyone else? So we have Steve, Brian, Fabrizio, Mason, Denise, and Victoria, yeah? Anyone else? Okay. So, Steve and Brian, will you manage the queue from your end?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So let me just kick off and then hand over to you. Basically, thank you for reaching out. This meeting is really almost an extension of yesterday's webinar. We're here to listen to you, answer questions, and provide clarification. And I think I'm glad you reached out, and we've assembled the group that we are able to assemble. So I'll leave it now to you to ask your questions, and we will in turn provide clarification. Thank you very much. Do you have any other objective of this call, Steve and Brian?
Shireen, it's Steve. I just about 15 minutes ago sent you a five-element outline that we proposed for the call, and the first is already over, the introductions. We did want to suggest that our objective for this call is to be able to describe to you some potential risks and flaws in the temporary spec and to encourage you to consider some relatively straightforward and simple fixes to the temporary spec that reduce the amount of risk that we and the ICANN organization would incur after May 25th. We then wanted to describe some legal risks ICANN restricted who is more than necessary, and I hope that you would have an opportunity to ask questions if you wanted more on that. We then thought we would dive into some of the flaws and consequences in the interim model that are described in the temporary spec. We would then turn to what is missing from the temporary spec, and given who's on this call, you know that that will feature the lack of a commitment to actually do an accredited access model. And then finally, we would ask what you think about the level of regard the board is showing for GAC advice on this very specific topic. We'll follow up the call, as promised, with specific recommended edits to your latest temporary spec document, but we felt it was most appropriate to go through a Q&A session about those flaws and consequences first, and then follow up with what will surprise you the minimum number of edits to the temporary spec to achieve the maximum reduction of risks and the preservation of the WHOIS system to manage those risks. So the first thing, Shireen, I thought I would do is ask Brian Winterfelt to quickly give you an appreciation of the notion of some legal risks to ICANN if the restriction on WHOIS is greater than necessary. So, Brian?
Great. Thank you so much, Steve, and thank you very much, Shireen, and to the board and to staff for making time for us today. One of the points that we wanted to make, as Steve has suggested, is that we want to thank the board for considering the potential legal liability for domain name registration authorities and additional risks should WHOIS data be more restrictive than necessary. And we do believe that there could be significant risks to trust, safety, and security. We know that risk is acknowledged by ICANN regarding security and stability as well as consumer safeguards. For example, the temporary specification on May 11th more clearly defines ICANN's mission and ICANN's role in facilitating third-party interests, such as protecting against malicious abuse and providing for rights and consumer protection. We are concerned that if WHOIS restricted more than necessary, it will decrease the ability to deal with cybersecurity issues. We're concerned that it could violate bilateral and multilateral free trade agreements. We're concerned that there could be increased risk for failure to comply with subpoenas, a stronger case for secondary IP infringement liability, potential tortious interference liability for displacing vendors in registration data markets, potential antitrust liability for conclusion to set a global standard and hoard registration data as proprietary customer lists, and also potential for reactionary legislation or regulation from the United States or even within Europe or other parts of the world. So we wanted to kind of outline that as a potential concerns and what, part of why we wanted to really speak to you today, seeing that the current temporary spec requires or allows the contracted parties to really black out a large portion of the WHOIS data without putting an access and accreditation model in place. You know, we are concerned about some of these risks, and we just wanted to be able to highlight them for the board.
Shireen, this is Steve. I'd like to ask you, Martin, and the other board members that are there in the room if you have a reaction to this notion that there are risks to the organization with a temporary spec along the lines of what Brian has just described. And I know that Becky has articulated how she felt about that on yesterday's webinar, but all the other board members there, please let us know what your thoughts are with respect to the risks that Brian just described.
Steve, I think it's better we for the moment listen to all of your points and then we'll assemble our thoughts. I think I don't want to put the board members on point at this stage. I think it's better that we listen and absorb, and if legal wants to provide some clarification, we will do that. But let us listen for the moment.
That's fine, Shireen. The purpose of asking was to discover whether we needed to go deeper and provide more substance. So, for instance, giving a high-level three-minute discussion that Brian just did is meant to substitute for a deep dive into each of these things, and we only would do the deep dive if you and the other board members in the room felt like they wanted to push back or wanting to learn more. So let's move on then. What we'd hope to cover next is to expose what we think are some serious flaws and the consequences of those flaws in the interim model, the calzone that is described in the temporary spec. And while we are very grateful that the annex on page 33 of Future Community Action was added in, we believe, for instance, that that lacks true commitments with actual deadlines and targets and outcomes. It simply says here are things to consider and tosses that ball to our rather contentious community to work out. So I think there are some significant flaws, and I'm going to turn to Brian to walk through a handful of them. And to the extent that we believe we can remedy those flaws, we will be able, after this call, to send you that promised red line of your latest temporary spec. Brian.
Great, Steve. Thank you so much. Again, we appreciate the changes that the board made to the original published temporary specification that came out last Friday, and we appreciate the additions that were made, and we know that there was a lot of work done by the board over the weekend, which we're really appreciative of. As Steve noted, we do appreciate the acknowledgement in the added appendix of certain areas that still require time and attention with regards to moving them forward within the community. But as Steve mentioned, without placing at least some of these in the temporary spec itself, and without setting hard deadlines and putting more parameters around them, we're going to see, a real potential harm that's done. And the just inclusion of them in the annex is not really going to make any changes to what's there right now. And so we're hoping, in the global interest, that some of these works that were kind of pushed to the annex could be considered by the board to put into the temporary specification itself. One of those, for example, we would love to see the board mandate that the data fields for legal entity registrants should not be redacted, since those are outside the scope of GDPR, where personal data is not involved. So, for example, publishing fields for registrant names like domain admin, org names, already mandated, physical address for any legal entity, publishing email addresses like domains at corporation.com are all things that are allowed within GDPR and would make a huge significant difference in the amount of data that's going to be blacked out and inaccessible. And if those are published as they are allowed under GDPR, would go a long way towards diminishing some of the harms that we just spoke about earlier. In addition, we're hoping that the temporary specification could mandate publication of registrant name and email based on an overriding public interest. This would be in addition to registrant org, state, province, county, as currently mandated in the temporary spec. The temporary specification instructs registrars and registry operators to redact for privacy registrant name, city, and postal code. Email will not be published, but third parties may contact registrants through an anonymized email or web form. The concern about the anonymized email or web form is that there's no ability to correlate domain names to a single registrant when there's an anonymized email or web form as the only form for access. The ability to make these correlations is critically important to cybersecurity and IP enforcement efforts. So, for example, cyber criminals often use a network of hundreds of domain names to stand up malicious websites that infect internet user computers with malware. The ability to correlate the registrant email addresses, even if sometimes they're false, the criminals will use the same false emails over and over again to make their scheme easier for them. And so the ability to correlate those is something that is really needed for cybersecurity work and often for internet enforcement work as well. So even the requirement to have some kind of uniform anonymized email would be a huge improvement over allowing a fragmented system where people are able to basically move forward without any ability to correlate. We also need or would like to see a provision in the temporary specification for correlations using actual registrant email or at a minimum, again, pseudo-anonymized email, which would allow that work to move further. And again, our understanding is pseudo-anonymization is acceptable under GDPR, under Article 32. And so again, a lot of these suggestions that we're making are things that are clearly allowed under GDPR and could easily be put into the temporary spec.
Shireen, I have a question if you could consider answering this one now, not to put people on the spot, but is there an appreciation that the use of UDRP and URS honestly, those would be rendered practically useless if we are unable to identify the registrant when making one of those filings. Is that something that management or the board has even thought about so far?
Okay. Steve, this is John. I think we're all looking at each other deciding who should answer the question, so I just wanted to chime in that has been part of the dialogue. A desire to understand what the impact on URFs and UDRP could be. It's part of the reason for ensuring that there would be or requiring that there would be some way to contact the registrant, even though we realize it's imperfect in its form of not having an accreditation model in place yet. We want to be able to allow the communication so that UDRPs and URFs could go forward and that there would be some way to reach out to the registrant. And anybody else can chime in if they'd like to add.
Steve, this is Akram. It was brought up that there is no way to confirm that the restaurant did receive the anonymized email sent by the web form or the anonymized email that the restaurants will provide. We will be looking at this and see if there is any way we can actually report back on an email that does not go through, basically. That might be one way that we would look at that.
I know we don't want to take up the hour answering the questions that you asked yesterday and responding to, and I know that you want to use this to communicate with the board members, so I just wanted to say the board members are aware of that topic. It was discussed over the weekend. It's something that's on the top of their list of things to consider.
Great, and it's not something that's been resolved yet, and if it were, let us know, and we will offer in our markups some ways to begin to address that. Let me ask Fabrizio Vaira to specifically comment on UDRP and URS.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks all for being here. So I think the response we received addresses whether the registrant gets notice of UDRP or URS, but fundamentally, the way Appendix E and Appendix F of the temp spec are written absolutely breaks the UDRP and URS. In essence, you end up in a cycle where, as written, the rules today and the policies today, you cannot file a UDRP or URS claim with any provider unless you identify the registrant. And the way this is written today, it's that the providers will have access to the information. But the provider only needs access after they receive a full complaint. What happens if you even misspell a registrant's name? It gets kicked back and taken out for a deficiency. So in essence, what you've set up is that every complaint that gets submitted is deficient on its face and can't be put forward. So the only way to really rectify this is either to provide access to the registrant information for complainants to actually draft non-deficient complaints, or make it so that the policy now reads that anyone can file what is known as a DOE complaint, meaning you just put in the thin WHOIS data that's projected to be released as part of the temp spec, and the provider who now has access has to fill in the correct data for you. Now, that still doesn't resolve the fact that the rules allow you to join multiple defendants when you know they're the same person, because nothing there is unique anymore in the record. But on its face, you've literally effectively broken the one tool that has been in place for decades to resolve domain disputes. And you know, just wanted to bring that to that level because it's not a matter of a nuance. It literally, on its face, breaks the system that we've had in place for over a decade.
And I think what Fab brings up, Shireen, and everyone else, is this notion that it's great that you're addressing the issue of, boy, how do we ensure that the registrant got notice? And that's good, but it's insufficient to solve the problem because if they don't reply and I don't have any kind of way to identify them, I can't actually follow the UDRP and URS. So it's more than just a relay of an email. That won't solve the problem that Fab just described. Let me bring up one other issue with respect to the current interim model, and that is the port 43 concern. The Port 43 access is not mentioned at all in the temporary spec, which left us believing that port 43, this automated single domain name, please understand, there's nothing about port 43 that's bulk. Port 43 is dropping into a terminal mode for a machine-to-machine query on an explicit, single, fully qualified domain name, to which a single response comes back. So we would, at this point, before we go into it too much, we see a significant risk if port 43 is turned off, as we've heard some registrars and registries may do. What is the position in the temporary spec about port 43, given that it's never even mentioned?
Steve, a minute. Akram wants to comment on that.
So, Steve, in the temporary spec, there is no mention for port 43 because there's nothing that changes from the contractual obligations that are currently in the contract. So the port 43 will not be shut off or cannot be shut off by any registry or registrar unless actually there are changes to their current contracts. Does that answer your concern?
Well, it's somewhat helpful, but Fabricio has one more follow-up. Fabricio on 43?
Yeah, so Akram, I heard you make that statement yesterday, and I think it highlights what's missing and a little bit of the elephant in the room with the temp spec. There are a lot of things that aren't covered, like port 43, and I think that this temp spec needs to spell out at the outset and very clearly that this isn't a replacement of current policies. It's just an amendment to what's specifically highlighted in the temp spec, and that everything else within ICANN contracts and ICANN consensus policies isn't changed unless it's specifically changed in the temp spec. Because otherwise what we're going to end up with is really fragmentation on people who interpret that silence means they can change things or take you know, leave to do things. And I think it needs to be very, very clear at the outset. You do make that point later on in one of the annexes with regard to what's covered in the annex, that unless something specifically is changed, it remains the same. I think that needs to be a sentiment that is right up front in the introduction and is repeated throughout the document, say, annex to annex, section to section, to make very clear that if not spelled out, then it doesn't change.
Steve, just to tell you how we're managing the queue from our end, when you guys speak, I have the phone on mute, and then I'm looking around the room who wants to comment or not. So I then switch it on. On this one, JJ would like to comment.
Thank you.
So we've taken the position that if it's not covered by the temp spec, it would anything in the contract would still be capable of being having compliance against it. So is there something specific, just so we understand the question, is there something specific that you were looking for to clarify that? Is that what the question is to the board? Or if not, can you help me understand?
Yeah, we'd like an explicit statement that Port 43 queries will continue to be honored in the period of implementation of the temporary specification. A rather simple request, and if that's implied pursuant to Akram's statement, that should be no lift at all to get something like that added.
And this is Brian. To clarify, you know, we've heard many contracted parties say port 43 is dead, there's no more port 43, port 43 is over. So we feel like there definitely is not clarity among contracted parties on that point. And we did, again, you know, we're bringing this up. We definitely heard what you said on the call yesterday. But we think making it explicit is something that would be valuable for ensuring Port 43 access to continue.
Brian, yeah. Chris Spain has a question to you before I see if anybody else wants to comment.
Well, Brian, it's Chris. Hi. Just help me out here. Are you concerned about access to Port 43, or are you talking about what data is going to be delivered through Port 43? Port 43 will, my understanding is that Port 43 will deliver the same data that is publicly listed on the web form, right? So Is there an expectation it's going to deliver something different?
No, I don't think the expectation is it'll deliver something different. I think the expectation is that it will be maintained.
Right. So the concern is that I'm just a little sort of confused as to why you're. I understand the importance of Port 43, but I'm not sure why you're calling that out specifically for specific mention, when the whole basis of the temporary specification is that unless it's mentioned in the temporary specification, it's still governed by the contract. It's not that I'm necessarily against it. I just don't understand why we would make a sort of special point of Port 43. Perhaps you could answer that.
Right, Chris. Thank you so much. That's an excellent question. Port 43, even though the same data will be provided as through other methods of querying, is used in intellectual property work and cybersecurity work. And the ability to access that same data through Port 43 allows capabilities that we can't do through other querying methods. And we have explicitly heard contracted parties say that they're going to turn off Port 43 access. And in fact, some contracted parties already have. Even though I understand typically, by definition, the temp spec, covers things that are outside of the regular contract and everything the regular contracts maintain, we think that's a point that somehow needs to be made very clearly to the contracted parties. Ideally, we think it would be made within the temp spec. If you don't think it's appropriate to put in the temp spec, we'd like it somehow sent and delivered in a message very strongly so that, again, we are concerned about the ability to continue to do the important work, as we know you are concerned as well about our ability to do our work to keep the internet clean and safe and stable. And this is a tool that is used, and the ability to continue to be able to access it is important to our community.
So, Brian, this is not sorry.
I just put it off mute. So, Chris will have a follow-up question, I think.
Or comment. So, Brian, this is Chris again. So bear with me on this, right? So, the purpose of the temporary specification is to put in place, and I may not be using exactly the right words here, but to put in place an emergency policy to cover things that need to be changed from the contract. Port 43 access is not changed. What's delivered in Port 43 access is changing, and that's because it's changing for everything. But the essence of Port 43 and the access to Port 43 is not changing. To include that in the temporary specification actually is breaches the purpose of the temporary specification. And we'd have to write a clause that currently the access to Port 43 and what's delivered in Port 43 is governed by the contract. There'd have to be a reason to put something into the temporary specification that it was either being challenged or changed by GDPR in order for us to mention it. Otherwise, it makes no sense to mention it because it's not covered in an emergency. And we'd be stretching the use of the temporary specification beyond that which it's intended to be used for. At least that's my take on it. I'm happy to accept if I'm wrong, but that's my take.
Would you be willing to accept that many registrars and registries have claimed, and maybe it was just an idle boast, that Port 43 was dead and wouldn't be available after May 25th, and if you accept that that's happened, then you can understand, Chris, why we're pressing for some sort of an explicit reminder that things like that have to stay on because they're not affected by the temp spec. And on that, Chris, if I could let Fabrizio Vieira come in one more time on 43 to clarify something. Fabrizio?
Hey, thanks, Steve. And Chris, you know when you speak up, I want to join the conversation. it's good to hear your voice. So listen, I guess back to my point, the only two places in the entire spec that state what I mentioned earlier are Appendix E and Appendix F dealing with the URS and the UDRP. That statement says, all other requirements not specified herein remain applicable and in force. I think it's very odd, to your point, and I think everyone here then agrees, if not covered in the temp spec, then it's not changed. But the only place the temp spec makes that comment are in those two places, UDRP and URS. If truly things like Port 43 are not changing, unless they are specifically changed by the temp spec, then that statement, all other requirements not specified herein remain applicable and in force, needs to be put at the outset of the temp spec. So it's very clear to everyone, including the contracted parties, who are running around saying Port 43 is dead and other things are changing that aren't listed in the temp spec, they're very clear, if not listed in the temp spec, does not change, and your obligations under the contract remain the same. So my request, I think the group's request would be, make sure that statement is plucked out of those two appendices and put at the outset that the entire document flows on that sentiment. And that doesn't seem like a heavy lift. It seems like
okay. We're
all saying the same thing. We just need to clarify it.
Sure. And we can add language that clearly in the beginning of this states out that if it's not mentioned here, the contract is still our existence, which covers anything writings about Port 43 or anything else. I'm fine with that. But can I admit, gentlemen and gentlewomen, that you are actually off your mark, because I don't think that this discussion is that important. What we are working with in the ICANN board and the ICANN management is to make sure that you actually get some access after May 25. Because as it currently looks, there is an individual access method because of lack of advice from the Article 29 group. And on a specific question, where can we get guidance on our accreditation model, they said July, August timeframe. So what we are seeing is in the temporary spec, we try to get a discussion going about legitimate interest. And as you know, according to how the law is written, public interest is really defined by law in Europe, which means that they don't give that much care about our what we believe is public interest. We share many of those things you pointed out, and we've been fighting for them quite much, which I hope that you'll be appreciative of. The real problem is that we cannot enforce anything that local law supersedes that. We have had external advice looking into to understand how the Article 29 group thinks. We have looked at it with our own knowledge, and we actually spoken directly to the Article 29 group and asked them specific questions, and you asked them questions as well. I think we should go back to, and we have now publicly said that ICANN.org is interested in asking for to be the legal entity who is responsible for the WHOIS system and the uses of the WHOIS system, standing in front of the contract parties. I think that that is the underlying question we need to discuss. The temporary spec is a way for us to create time for the community to come up with a policy. But if nothing happens in between now and when the community comes together with a policy, if the law looks like it is today and the interpretation by the Article 29 group looks like it is today, I think that the Port 43 discussion, as important that it is for you, which we never said anything about, will just have the effect that you will have much less access to information from May 26 going forward. And it's not a bug. It's not us. It is a feature of the law. And I think that we rather having a conversation like this, as I said many, many times, join forces with us to go and try to address some of those problems. The board specifically said in the temporary spec that we believe there is a public interest of the WHOIS system, that we actually think it's important to maintain a WHOIS system in the temp spec. It's a fairly strong thing for the board to say. Let's work on that instead, please.
Joran, thank you for that. This is Steve. Appreciate that, and we're happy to segue to what most of us on this call have been working on for the past 3 months, pretty much nonstop, and that's accreditation and access model, an accredited access model. And that is, in fact, the next thing in our outline. And it's great to have us focus on that. First thing I would like to do is to remind all the members of the board that if we just approve the temp spec as it's written, then each and every registry and registrar would have a completely fragmented capability of responding, if it chooses to respond, to requests for non-public WHOIS data. That fragmented system will very quickly be perceived as just plain broken. And the mention, while it's great that an accreditation and access model is mentioned as the first bullet in the further community action, we are just flummoxed by this notion that it can only move ahead when there's explicit guidance from Article 29 or the European Data Protection Board. Because I would observe that the rest of this temporary spec, based on the CalZone model, has gotten to this point without an explicit statement from Article 29 approving exactly what it is the board is being asked to approve. So why is it that we are saying that the accreditation and access model can only be done pursuant to explicit DPA advice when we did no such thing for the interim model.
I'm a little bit concerned now because we actually did propose the outline for an accreditation model. Remember that the law prohibits really an accreditation model because it talks about individual responsibility for the data processors slash data controllers. They're the ones who, according to the law, should make the decision. And I've said for a very long time that so what we're actually trying to do is to take a ball and put it into a square hole. The law doesn't have sort of provisions for that, with one exception. And that is that they have issued guidelines about accreditation models based on code of conduct. You can find that on our webpage. But they clearly state out that the governments of Europe, the member states of Europe, are going to have a very important role, that they are the ones who sets up the accreditation houses. It's the member states who agrees on a national level to do that. It's in the guidance. Our portion of that was, of course, to get our member states within the GAC to do that on a collective scale. Unfortunately, that didn't work out in the first round. But we are still working on the same method. So anything that doesn't, according to the guidance that we received today, the only way to get an accreditation model, this round ball through the square hole, is to have blessings, formal blessings from the member states of the EU. So,
do you believe you got formal blessings for everything else that's in the temporary spec regarding the interim model?
I think, Steve, you're missing my point. I'm answering one question, so let's stay with that question right now. Because this is, we've been trying to be as helpful as we can in this discussion. I went out and said how important access to information is for you guys. The board has never shied away from that. So, but that is the thing that worries us. How do we get you to get access to data in the first place? So that's our concern. That's what we would like to talk to you about. But they have given, as you know, Baltic Quangur has given guidance. They've written an official guidance paper about accreditation models. It's not really defined for the multi-stakeholder model, but it's still there. And the Calzona model included that type of discussion. They, on specific questions, they said no, which means that they haven't made up their minds how to do this anyway, which means that without that guidance, it's very hard for us to enforce anything on the contract parties because that's the missing point. You know as well as I do.
Joran? Yes, Joran, give me just one moment to direct a question to the board members that are beside you in the room, your fellow board members, to get an understanding about this differential standard with respect to the interim model and the accreditation model, in the sense that on the one hand, we're relying upon advice from Article 29, which is mixed in its endorsement of the interim model, and yet we are requiring explicit advice to the accreditation and access model. And if the board believes that that's the way it's going to proceed, it sets us up in a situation where it will take much longer to get momentum and approval of an accredited access model. So I'd be interested to see what the other board members believe with respect to that two-track process.
Before I leave over to any of my other board members, I want to reiterate something. The problem is that we cannot enforce. That means that it's not up to us to end up in court. And that's why we ask humbly that we would be the legal partner who can actually drive those things in forehand when the law is enacted. Today, ICANN.org lacks the legal capabilities to do that. So what you're asking, maybe you should ask this question also to a contracting party who's willing to take that risk to do this.
Steve, I'm going to put you on mute for a minute. We're going to just chat here and come back to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Shireen, just for the record, I'm on, George, and I'll be on for the rest of the call. Oh. Thank you.
Okay. Steve, Chris will respond here. Steve, thank you.
Thank you all for laying that out so clearly. Let me start by saying there's no one on the board who doesn't believe that there needs to be some form of model by which various different actors can get access to deeper layers of data than that which are public. But fundamentally, this is a risk assessment issue. JJ or Akram said publicly yesterday in the session that I can, or the board will stand both behind and in front of the model that we've currently put on the table and go into bat for that model and say, we believe that model is defensible in respect to GDPR. Our current view is that an application model without guidance from the DPAs, without input from all sorts of, through the community and guidance from the DPAs or from the European Communion governments is not defensible at this stage. We could not in all conscience stand up and say we stand behind and in front of that model. Our goal is to get to that point as quickly as possible. Now, whether that is through going directly to the DPAs and seeking guidance or going around another way, I don't know. But our goal is to get to this rule. Any work that we can do together, you guys are an integral part of an accreditation model because you are some of the very important people who are going to be accredited in that model. But right now, for us to go forward on the 25th of May and stand behind that model, it's pretty much as is what we're prepared to stand behind. Thanks.
Hey, Chris, thank you. This is Steve, and I appreciate the notion that it's a risk assessment issue. And earlier on the call, we did our best to give you the other side of the balance on risk assessment. That is to say, the risks to ICANN, should we suddenly break the notion of the non-public WHOIS fields and fragment it into hundreds of different responses, if any. So that's one risk assessment issue. And let me turn to Fabrizio, because I'd really like to take you up on the offer of what can we do in this temp spec and otherwise. What can we do to increase the speed and effectiveness of an accreditation access model that will need to be constructed, even as this is being deployed. So it's short, Chris, of asking you to please approve version 1.5, which we just circulated the other day. Short of asking you to do that, and you've indicated reasons you don't believe that you could do that, I believe we have very specific asks that will increase the speed and effectiveness of the model we will develop together. Fabrizio?
Thanks, Steve. Chris and others, and I guess, and Goran, I keep hearing about the Article 29 Working Party advice on this issue, and I agree. I think this is the most important issue, so Goran, thanks for raising it. The last advice that the – just so we all are on the same page. The last advice that Article 29 Working Party gave to ICANN on this issue says, in this respect, the Article 29 – encourages ICANN to develop appropriate policies and procedures applicable to incidental and systematic requests for access. It goes on to say that it notes that the model, final interim model, says that registries and registrars can give access to non-public data and encourages ICANN to actually put something in the contract and develop models on accreditation access. So it sounds like we're all on the same page here yet again, which is that we all agree it's important. We all think it's needed to make sure we don't have fragmentation in a broken system. Article 29 agrees that it needs to be set and appropriate, obviously, along with the GDPR. And so I guess if I had to make a ask here, it would be that instead of relegating this very important issue to something that it will be addressed at a future date, why aren't we in the temp spec going ahead and saying, hey, the community needs to get together and fast-track this and put in hard deadlines as to by when the community agrees to something and by when the community needs to implement something. It's just as or more important than a lot of the things that have deadlines in the spec. And frankly, it's somewhat of an easy lift, right, because the community, since before ICANN 61, has been putting together, iterating, as you guys know, an access and accreditation model. We're currently up to about 45 pages. We have people like VeriSign, APWG, FIRST, MOG, you name it, actually putting into the model. So you kind of have something you could start with right away to fast track this very important issue. And so I guess if I had to take away one thing is we need to actually have this not in some annex as a future date. It needs to be a requirement of the temp spec as asked by the Article 29 Working Party that a model be agreed to and put up with details in compliance with GDPR by a certain date for access to non-public UAs. We've heard from Article 29, that's what's needed. That's what we've been operating on. We've asked org many times about this, and they said, you know, you should work together. We're working together. We have something. Can we get the commitment from the board to put in the temp spec that this is something that needs to be stood up within a certain time period? Dates, targets, just like all the other things we put dates and targets to.
Give us a second. We'll come back to you. 1 second. Okay, we're back. JJ or Chris? Chris?
Couple of things to sort of to say. One, I just want to flag for you that we are struggling a little bit with the use of the word accreditation in the domain, because accreditation in respect to GDPR has particular meanings in respect to GDPR. And so we just want to be a little bit careful that we're using it as a generic term at the moment. Some sort of credentialing model might be a better way of putting it, because there are issues with that. I just wanted to flag that. There's nothing to be discussed about it.
But it is just noteworthy because it's confusing to the DPAs because of the use of the term accreditation in the GDPR. So we're not at all shying away from your model. We're just pointing out that we may need to use different language than accreditation so that it's not sending it on a path that we've heard won't get advice until August or September, as opposed to a path where we might be able to move more quickly.
Exactly. Secondly,
yeah, that's really appreciated. Go ahead.
Secondly, anything that goes into the tech spec temporary specification needs to be agreed with, discussed with the contracted parties, and it's a contractual document. So as far as we're concerned, it's something that needs to be agreed by them as well. I just wanted to flag that, say that, you know, they need to be on board. Thirdly, because it's a contractual document, we would be concerned about putting stuff into that document without being certain that we can deliver. That said, we are prepared to go away and think about ways that we can find to make it clearer that there is a firm commitment to some sort of a credentialing model, whether that is by putting something in the temporary specification or by way of a board resolution, we're not sure yet. But we acknowledge and accept that it is important, and we need to find a way of perhaps delivering the message a little better that we know and acknowledge that it's important.
Thank you, Chris. Go ahead.
Sorry, real quick. And Chris, I appreciate that because, you know, I think everyone in the board knows or should know that, you know, and everyone in that room, you know, what Working Party 29 said wasn't that the contracted parties should decide on something or that the contracted parties should develop something. It actually says the Working Party encourages ICANN to indeed develop binding contractual commitments in this respect, respect meaning how registries and registrars release data in regard to a credentialing system, with respect between and among ICANN registries, registrars, as suggested by the final interim model. So they actually asked ICANN to do it, and I appreciate you guys taking this up and doing a commitment, because we're not asking that you put the model in here, but we're asking that this model go forward as part of a discussion and fast track so that we end up with the proper credentialing and access that we need. So thank you. And sorry, Steve, for cutting you off.
Chris, this is Steve. I wanted to encourage, as you try to be creative to address this, think about the context of the temporary spec that the board is being asked to approve. The temporary spec can last for up to a year with these 90-day renewals on the part of the board. And the notion here is that if a deadline, because that's what we had mentioned earlier, if there were a deadline for the community to consider and resolve and develop an accredited access model, then if that deadline were missed, the board would do exactly what the board and org are doing right now. It would issue a top-down decision with community input, but when we in the community fail to reach consensus on an accredited model, and that might mean because the contract parties are not happy with it. I don't know what it will mean. It could be that the folks on this call are not happy with it. But if we don't have consensus, a deadline implies that org will do for accredited access exactly what it is doing here with the interim model. That is to issue a temporary spec telling contract parties exactly what has to be done to honor accredited access. That is something that could be done in 90 days. And if we do not have consensus in 90 days, then the board will do what board and org have done in exactly this circumstance with respect to Calzone.
Just a second, Steve. And by the way, we have 6 minutes left, so...
Do you have a hard stop, Shireen? We're here for as long as you can go.
There's a lot of people here who do have, unfortunately.
Okay.
Give us 1 minute, I'll come back to you.
Thank you.
Okay, Steve, Joran will address the issue of deadline.
Steve, there is sometimes in life you have to choose which building you're entering. So let's, just for the sake of my argument, let's enter my building for a while, where I think that the only way for you to get this sort of access you want and need is through the governments, the member states of Europe, as it's been cleared out by, because that's what the DPF said. So that is my building. And we accept the fact that the law, as itself is written, is not written in such a way that the multi-stakeholder model is incompatible. That means that I would be very happy to work with you, to continue to work with you, together with the member states of Europe. We often think it is about GAC, but we can actually reach beyond that. To work with the accessory member states. It's not the GAC representative that makes decisions about this. There are increasing discussion between the EPAs in individual countries and the governments about this, which is about the GAC people. And that's why it's hard also to set a deadline. That could happen if the member states, if we really thoroughly went to the member states. And this is not us being illegally responsible. That is actually by having the ID to have some sort of unified accreditation model. If we get the member states' blessing of that, That is according to what the guideline says. It's according to principles set by the GDPR. And you will go back and reread what we wrote in Calcerno the first time. We would love to work you on that, but we have to enter this building. Because the other building
you're in?
Yes, the other
you're
building
in.
That you're in is
right.
That you have to find a way to work together with the
company. I got you.
Get them to
I got you. So our building is the community, and your building says that only European governments can drive the model. But hang on a minute. Our building itself is one that will not reach consensus easily, if at all, on an accredited model. And I am asking you, and you don't have to answer because we're going to run out of time. Brian has something to say. But I am asking that a 90-day deadline allows the board to say that if the community building lacks consensus and the government building hasn't said what it is, that org and board will do exactly what you're doing right now in the interim model. Come up with an accredited access model based on a variety of inputs, just like you've done here, and that will become a required temporary spec in 90 days. So let me turn to Brian Winterfeld for a close.
Okay. Steve, let's move on. We've heard it, so let's move on. Let's hear Brian.
Agreed.
Certainly. On yesterday's webinar, Joran indicated that ICANN is exploring the possibility of taking on responsibility as sole data controller for all WHOIS activity, shifting risk away from individual contracted parties to itself in an effort to preserve WHOIS to a greater extent. Can you expand on this idea, and is there anything we could do as part of the community to help make this happen?
Thank you. I didn't use the word the exact word you used, because I would never use them, because JJ will say that I shouldn't use them. But the actual effect of what we're trying to achieve, and this is a political discussion through the member states and also through the European Commission, where we reached out to the GAC, but we're also reaching out to the member states itself and the European Commission. There are possibilities to do this because there are writings within the law, the SOLA gives that. But also the European Commission has some powers when it comes to the European Commission writes the law, and therefore they have one of their rights they have is that they have a first right to interpretation of the law in general, not on specific cases, because that's their independence. So I think that any way you can support from the IPC, that would be very, very beneficial for this course. Well, we have said earlier on that we are looking into, for instance, if anyone goes after a contracted party, we want to be a part of that lawsuit. Now we're raising the game. And I would say, to be clear, Brian, we are actually trying to become what you sometimes believe that we are, responsible. Thank you.
Appreciate that. The board itself is exercising, I believe for the first time, the awesome power of approving a temporary spec that is binding upon all the contract parties. And I'm sorry that you have to do this. You have to do this because the community over the past several years has been unable to reach a consensus on how to replace the RDS system with full knowledge that GDPR was coming and bearing down on us. So the power that you have to do this in response to ORC's proposal is exactly the power that you may need to exercise to solve access to non-public WHOIS for accredited entities. So it's not a tool that you use one time and renew for 90 days for a year. It's a tool that once you use it, you are probably going to need to use it again. So please be creative about that and understand the need to drive consensus with deadlines where you try to guide the action towards policy outcomes with as much specificity as you can, because I doubt we will get much specificity from the European Data Protection Board in the next 90 days. I want to thank everybody. We are 1 minute over. All members of the board and management, thank you for participating, and also to members of the IPC and BC who carved this time out. We're going to follow up, as promised, with a red line of the temporary spec, and we'll accompany that with a cover email that explains what each change is designed to do. Anything final from you, Shireen?
Steve, I wanted to thank you. Question, when will we receive this email from you on the red line?
I believe you'll get it within an hour.
Okay, thank you very much. And thank you for reaching out, and thanks for all the questions. So
thanks,
thank
all.
You. All right.
Alrighty.
Cheers for now. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone.